The Monday, July 1st, 2024, Columbia City Council meeting to order. I invite all those who are able to please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Holly, can you please call roll?
Yes. Mr. Foster? Mr. Waterman?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Ms. Buffalo?
Here.
Ms. Meyer?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
All right. So good evening. Happy 1st of July. The public have multiple opportunity to speak at Columbia City Council meetings. You can speak under portions of public hearing, old business, new business. And then at the end, we also have remarks. I do ask that people keep their conversation limited to the legislation being discussed. And then at the end, you can speak again on anything you want to talk about. You'll be given 3 minutes as an individual. If you are an organization being affected by the legislation, you can request 5. Only one speaker for each organization will be allowed that 5 minutes, but you can speak for 3 if you're the second. I ask that people respect the time limit so that everyone has an opportunity to speak. And as a reminder, there's always opportunity for disagreement in a free society. I do ask that we not attack people. We can attack ideas, but we are trying to all move together. This includes city staff. If someone should interrupt a meeting or yell from an audience, I will give a warning to stop. If it continues, you may be asked to leave and we might take a 5-minute recess. Again, just remember we're all neighbors and working together for Columbia. All right, so moving on for our agenda normal items, I'll make a motion to approve the June 17th, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Waterman. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. Moving on. Are there any changes to the agenda? Seeing none, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as posted. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Waterman. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, we have no special items and no appointments to boards and commissions, so we'll go on to our scheduled public comment. Members of the public can reach out to the city manager's office by noon the Wednesday before the city council meeting to request 5 minutes at the beginning of a schedule or the city council meeting. They cannot be on items that are on that night's agenda. And then of note, it's been typical practice that we'll bring up conversations if questions are asked at the end of the council meeting under general comments by the council members. This evening, we have 3 scheduled public comments. So I'd first like to now ask Donald Weaver to come forward to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be good with 3, I promise.
It will be, okay, thanks.
Just here tonight on behalf of the Columbia Police Officers Association with, I guess, a challenge for council. CPOA and the officers, the men and women who serve this community, we'd really like to challenge you to commit to a 5-year plan that will rescue the police pension fund, ensure that it's removed from the governor's watch list, and achieve a funding ratio of at least 80%. And we'd really love it if we can really dig in and get this plan in place by the end of this fiscal year. Just as a reminder, I don't think anyone was here then, but in 2012, the city and the CPOA worked together to come up with a revised pension plan that significantly cut benefits, had some impact in our recruiting and retention over the years, but the idea was, and the promise from the city was that by reducing reducing that pension plan, within 20 years, the city would be able to achieve an 80% funding ratio. And we're 12 years into that 20, and we haven't made enough progress towards the 80%. So that's all I have to say this evening. And thank you, folks.
Thank you, appreciate it. Now I'd like to ask Emily, your last name, Piontek? Yes.
Good evening, council members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. I'm here before you both as a citizen and as a participant in the 100% by 2030 coalition that for several years now has been advocating for Columbia Water and Light to swiftly transition to clean energy. I also work for the local clean energy organization, Renew Missouri. I know that a revision to the renewable energy ordinance has been a topic of discussion for many months, and I hope to see this body act on that ordinance with the urgency and attention that the climate crisis requires of our leaders. However, tonight I am here to ask that you all consider pursuing a complementary effort to the goal of decarbonizing our utility by launching what is known as a Solarize campaign. Solarize campaigns have been done in communities across the U.S. to increase residential and commercial solar adoption. Sometimes these campaigns enable participants to purchase the panels and other equipment in bulk, which can then bring down the overall cost for every participant in installing solar. For an example, close to home, Kansas City ran a Solarize campaign in 2022 and signed nearly 700 people up for residential and commercial systems. This was a group purchasing effort that brought the price of each installation down, and as of August 2023, nearly 100 systems had been installed, resulting in more than 700 kilowatts, so almost a megawatt, of clean energy being placed on the local grid, as well as resulting in $2.1 million in economic activity. A Solarize campaign in Columbia would require that you all and community groups organize together. The first step would be to issue an RFP to local solar developers and trying to find a developer or developers that can meet the campaign priorities the most affordably, such as by offering that bulk group purchasing option to bring the price down, or by working with financial institutions to ensure that low-income households and property owners can also participate in the Solarize campaign or Solarize program. Once this campaign is launched, the city and the organizations would work together to try to get the word out to as many people as possible, which I think is where the Solarize campaign is really key. I know that Columbia Water and Light already has different rebates and incentives for people to go solar, but I still feel that there's an awareness gap. And so, you know, trying to get the word out, trying to get as many people to go solar as possible in a condensed amount of time is a way to generate interest in the campaign. I also wanted to highlight a couple of programs that Columbia Water and Light already offers, which I do think would complement the campaign. First of all, we have the rebates for solar systems that range from about $150 to $625 per kilowatt. And then you have low interest loans up to $15,000 for residential customers and $30,000 for commercial customers. So that can help get those low-income property owners able to participate in the Solarize campaign as well. Finally, there's a federal tax credit, about 30% of the cost of the installation that's now available to taxpayers who want to go solar, and this will be available at that level until 2032. So it's a really good time, again, to try to get the word out and to get more and more people to go solar. It's a great way to do this quickly. If Columbia ran a Solarize campaign, we would be taking great strides towards decarbonizing our system. We would be able to proactively get more clean energy on our local grid while we wait for the coal contracts to expire or for utility-scale clean energy projects to get built. We all know that stuff takes a long time. Additionally, the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law unlocked billions of dollars for the clean energy transition, and we know that opportunities such as Solar for All and the Climate Pollution Reduction Block Grants will bring opportunity to Columbia, but these federal opportunities can take a long time to materialize. In addition, the funding is limited. If Columbia were to dedicate some city resources towards bringing interested groups together and solar businesses together to launch a Solarize campaign, we wouldn't have to wait for these things to coalesce to get more clean energy on our local grid. I thank you for your time, and I hope you will be in touch about this opportunity.
Thank you, Emily. Now I'd like to ask Margaret McConnell to please come forward to speak.
Good evening. I'm Margaret McConnell. I'm a resident of Columbia for about 5 years. I'm a grandma with grandchildren in Columbia. I'm a member of Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church, and through them, I've worked with Turning Point Day Center and with Loaves and Fishes Soup Kitchen, and I'm also a member of Como Mobile Aid Collective, COMAC. But I'm not speaking as a representative of any of those organizations. I'm speaking as a member of the community, as a fellow citizen of Columbia, and I want to talk about our unsheltered population, but mostly I want to talk about the city of Columbia. Today was great, the weather was great, but if you've looked at the forecast, tomorrow's going to be a scorcher. We got a high of 94, I think, forecast, and a heat index of 103, and that's just what happens. This is Columbia. We know that that's going to happen. We also know that we're likely to get some nights when it doesn't cool off at night. That's one of the things that happens in this part of the country in the summer. Hopefully it doesn't happen too often, but that's one of the criterion that the National Weather Service uses when they're gauging heat advisories and dangerous heat. If you have 2 days when the heat index is going to be in triple digits, and the night in between, it doesn't cool below 75, that puts it at a whole nother level. Because if it doesn't cool off at night, if we have hot nights, then not only the air and the ground doesn't cool off, but people's bodies can't cool off. They heat up to a certain level. If they can't go back to a baseline overnight, then they are in a vulnerable position when they start out in the morning. Organs get stressed. Blood flows to the extremities to cool you off. That takes oxygen from your internal organs. Organ stress. Eventually, if you have enough nights when it doesn't cool off, organ systems shut down. People die. People die from the heat. It doesn't happen in the same way that it happens with cooling, but it does happen. All right? We know that that happens. We know that the danger is there, and we know that our unsheltered population is especially vulnerable because a lot of them are elderly. A lot of them have asthma or COPD from years outside. Everybody's vulnerable. And the good news is that we have the perfect template for setting up overnight cooling shelters, because in the wintertime we set up emergency overnight warming shelters. We know how to do this. Turning Point and Harbor House and Room at the Inn, we know how to do this. There's going to have to be changes made, and I'm asking that we come together as a city, we set up a policy. What do when the nights are too hot? We have to have some parameters so we know when those nights are too hot. Maybe something like heat index in triple digits above 99 during the day and a forecast heat index of 85 or above at night. We know it's going to be too hot for people to cool off. We do have Room at the Inn that is a year-round shelter. However, talked with John Trapp just this week, Room at the Inn has been at capacity more nights than not for the month of June. And that's we had a pretty good heat wave last week. I'm sure everybody still remembers. But there's still are only so many spaces over there, and even if they try to make a little room, there's not too much. We're going to have some emergency overflow. We know how to do that, and we need to do it, and we need to do it fast, because this is Columbia, and we know we're going to have more heat. And we need to take care of our vulnerable population. That's our responsibility as citizens. We take care of people. This is Columbia. So we have the template. We know how to do it. We know the danger is real. And we can't, as a city, lose people. We can't let that be on our collective conscience. We can't be responsible for someone's death when we know the danger and we have the means to get it mitigated. Now, I said earlier that I wasn't going to speak for any specific group, and I'm going to walk that back. I'm going to speak for the grandmas of Columbia, because we got to do the right thing, because this is Columbia. We're Columbia, and we take care of each other.
Thank you, Margaret. Thank you, Eric. All right, moving on. We don't have any public hearings this evening, so I'll go ahead and ask Holly to read old business. Holly, will you please read Bill 14124?
Council Bill 14124 is an ordinance approving the preliminary plat of Richland Estates Number 2, located on the west side of Olivet Road and south of Richland Road, authorizing a development agreement with Richland Olivet Farm, LLC, directing the city clerk to record the development agreement and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, Tim Teddy, Community Development Director. And what we have here is I'll call it a major revision to a preliminary plat known as Richland Estates. We're calling this major revision Richland Estates Plat 2 to distinguish that from the one that was approved about a year ago. And the location is 6800 Richland Road, generally south of Richland, west of Olivet, with frontage on both of those roads. And the total area that's being subject to this preliminary plat is 126.7 acres. The new plat, for your consideration, has 272 lots. Not all of those are for homes, however, so it's 251 home sites that are created. with this, or enabled, I should say. And this is the overview of the site, and you'll notice some different internal lines there. Council will recall just 2 weeks ago, the city approved an annexation and zoning ordinance for this 29 acres here that is in the southeast region of it. And then in a moment, I'll talk a little bit about the corner of Olivet and Richland, where unlike last year's plat, that's not included in this year's preliminary plat. And then this is a more up-to-date aerial photo, early 2023, that just shows a broader overview of the area. The property's marked with a star, and you can see that the streets have been graded and paved for Old Hawthorne North, which is immediately west. And then you can see the larger Old Hawthorne development off to the southwest, over the northeast Sunrise Estates, which is a very large and older subdivision in county jurisdiction. So these are the three main ways in which this has changed. First of all, adds that 29.68 acres that's in the southeast area, and that was actually approved by the county authorities prior to annexation with a subdivision known as Oak Mill Estates, or the estates at Oak Mill, I believe might be the proper name on it. And then it also rearranges the lot and street layout, not only for what had been Richland Estates, but also this additional area and the plat that had been known as Oak Mill. And in so doing, it reduces lot size and increases the number of lots. And that adds up to 86 more residential lots compared to the prelim plat that was approved last year by the City Council and the Oak Mill Estates plat that had been approved earlier by the county. This time, and I'll just point to it, this oblong parcel that is in the city, it's owned a mixed-use neighborhood in the city. It was part of the prelim plat last year. This year, it's outside of it. The owners of that wish to proceed on their own schedule with that, and they'll have to plat that at the appropriate time when it's prepared for development. So this is how the plat looked last June when council acted on it. A lot of the features are still the same, particularly in the north half, but there's been quite a few changes to the south half, where you can see some of the lot sizes are quite large. And there's the data on it on the right-hand side of the slide, 146 lots, all zoned R1, one commercial lot that was, it's gonna be about 4.7 acres net of right-of-way in that MN zoned lot. And then there's 14 common lots, and for various purposes, open space, stormwater mitigation and tree preservation, I believe, and also community amenity. And then there's two of the collectors that are shown on the city. The CATSO major roadway plan were present on this, and that's a street called Burley. So this means a street that's really designed to move people between neighborhoods and is capable of being extended through subsequent subdivisions. Burley would be the north-south one. Adair Manor Drive would be the east-west one. And then side by side, and you can see on the right is the one that's before you tonight, Richland Estates 2. The streets are highlighted in shading there too, so it might be a little more legible, but you can see some of the differences. It's generally a curvilinear street layout, just a few cul-de-sacs or eyebrow type terminal streets on it, but generally it's through streets and short blocks. The collectors are in place. Those will be built by the developer 100% at their cost. And then you do have a reservation of area for the Grindstone Creek, South Fork there, and the associated floodplain and what we call stream buffers. This is a regulatory thing that prelim plats must have, as well as the final plat. And that's a a no disturb and minimal disturbance zone of 50 feet from each edge of the stream, so 50 feet in each direction in this case on that. So that protects the stream edge. It also protects properties from erosion as well as the stream itself. And so the additional 29 acres has been incorporated into this now. And this has also created some opportunities to coordinate the street systems of three plats. One has been final platted and is in development, and that's Old Hawthorne North. There's this one, which is being proposed for preliminary approval tonight. And then there is a preliminary approval of Silver Lakes directly to the north. And in all cases, the streets of those subdivisions have been coordinated, so they do extend properly from one development tract into the other. And then there's a Boone County roadway easement of 33 feet, where Boone County had anticipated that someday there'll be a need for intersection improvement. And then there's that old prelim plat requirement of some additional right-of-way at the corner to basically bank land for future intersection improvement that would most likely be a roundabout when warranted. Okay, and so you can see that on the south end, those large lots that staff refers to as estate lots, they were half acre and more in size, those now have been rearranged. We now have an average lot size through the development of 8,000, our minimum lot size is 7,000. So you're gonna have a minimum of 7,000 and 8,000 square feet on average. There's common lots as before. Burley Drive is unchanged from the layout on the approved prelim plat from last year. Dare Manor has been shifted somewhat north to better fit the new layout of lots, but it is still what we refer to as a collector street. So these will have minimal or no driveways, so there won't be that kind of conflict. There'll be street trees on them. In the case of Burley, there's about a 40-foot buffer beyond just the right-of-way. Of course, there's a green strip on each and every road that gets built, but what I'm talking about is beyond that, there's these common lots that will serve as somewhat of a buffer, and then they also will prevent driveway access to that street from the west side. And then there's a street called Grimshaw that on last year's prelim plat extended all the way through to Olivet. That's just gonna be a dead end at this commercial parcel. I'll also add that the commercial parcel also allows multifamily, so it is a truly mixed use designation. So that is a possibility there, some kind of higher density housing. And there's, I'll show you on a subsequent slide, there's actually some residential multifamily in county jurisdiction, just a few acres of that's nearby. So they did a site analysis of this. This is a required step in platting. They identified two areas where there's gonna be tree preservation. They identified the area where there is a regulatory floodplain. Most of that floodplain, including the whole floodway, which is the part of the stream that really needs to be preserved from any kind of grading or filling, for flood control, that's all on a common lot. And so we think that's been well planned for. And then there's additional common lots as before for stormwater management, green space and amenities. This approval also involves approving a development agreement. And as part of that, there's a $103,457 contribution to offsite traffic improvements. The language says the city can spend it anywhere within a 3-mile radius, but we've identified, and they've identified through their traffic study, the intersection of Grace Lane and Grace Lane Rolling Hills and Richland as really being the area that will need attention first with all the development that's going on, this subdivision and all the others that are active in the area. So that's most likely where that will be applied. There's a requirement for an eastbound right turn lane into Burley off of Richland, so that's just to separate the right turns from the through movements there. That was warranted by the traffic study. And then there's an alignment of a street called Bodium, with a street across the way that's just in the planning stages, but it's on an approved preliminary plat in Silver Lakes. And then there's standard right-of-way dedications on Richland and all of that. There will be sidewalk on those streets where the frontage, where this subdivision has frontage, and that'll all be built by the developer. So this went through our process for prelim plats. May 9th, the Planning and Zoning Commission took it up, and by a vote of 7-0, they're recommending approval. That is also staff's recommendation.
Okay.
Ready to answer any questions?
Any questions for staff from council? Just one that I had, someone had asked about whether or not, so the development meets all of city standards, like for roadway size and all of that, that would have gone through your staff's vetting before it even went to planning and zoning, correct?
Yeah, and we were provided a comment, a public comment, that this straightaway section exceeds a standard that's in the city's street standards. We use 800 feet as a guideline, beyond which there should be some curvature. However, it's a discretionary standard, so we did exercise that discretion with last year's plat. It is shown as a fairly straight road. We do have other collector streets that do run fairly straight through Columbia in areas where we have kind of a grid-like street system. So it would be my contention that this does meet standards. And then we've had comments on the perimeter roads. Richland is not built to what we show in our Appendix A of our code as a major arterial. That's the planning designation for it. So that's not something that obligates a development of this size to build it out to a full arterial section. They provide what we call the half width of right of way. So there's 55 feet from the center line that they provide, and that makes that type of roadway possible in the future, but it's not needed to be widened to that extent at this time. So if this was 1,000 acres and it was straddling a Richland road, that might be a scale of development where that subdivider would basically bring it up to that standard, but this is 100 acres. So.
Okay. Any other questions for staff before I open up for public comment?
Quick question. And they've been able to improve on the design to add more housing options from what they originally had planned. From your presentation, quite a large number, which we have a need for. Am I right? So what? Why did they change? Why did they go in this direction, do you think? Just to be able to have a larger, more opportunities for people?
Yeah, it might be the acquisition, and they'll speak to that. It might be the acquisition of the additional property, because with it being in a county designation that was called AR, that's a zoning designation that goes all the way back to the original county zoning map in 1973. In 1973, development in this area did look a lot different. That trunk sewer that's now present, that was part of the grindstone, I think it's the phase 3 sewer, goes right through that property, so I think it certainly has the infrastructure to support that higher density. And I'd look at it as it's a little more efficiency in terms of lot yield for similar costs and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you.
Any other questions from council for staff? All right. Would anyone from the public wish to speak on Bill 14124?
Madam Mayor, members of the council, Tim Crockett. Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. I'm gonna forego most of my presentation. I believe Mr. Teddy did a very good job at summarizing this project. Most of my presentation would be duplicate of what he already spoke about, but I would like to answer a couple of the questions. First of all, the reason why, Councilman Myers, the reason why we're changing this is this slide here shows the current city limits as of 2 weeks ago, and you can see the lightly shaded yellow is the original preliminary plat. This is the original preliminary plat. In the lower right-hand corner, you can see that development that's in the county. That was a previously approved single-family development in the county that had lots ranging from one, about 1.5 acres in size. And so this development was sandwiched between that piece and Old Hawthorne North to the west, which had larger one-acre tracts in it as well. So the thought there was is when you have 1 to 1.5 acres on one side, one on the other side, basically you're going to keep with the same type of development and do the larger lots. To the north were larger lots as well. But of course now we add that piece. My client has acquired this preliminary plat, which is the piece that was in the county, and added it to it. So when they add it to it, they come up with a development like this. So you talk about the different types of lots, and that's exactly what we're looking at here. And so what we had before was large single-family lots and then acreage lots. And so what we've been able to do is provide a variety of lot sizes, anything from 60-foot wide, which is a city minimum. We've got 70s, 80s, all the way up to 90s. And when I say estate lots, there's four larger lots down in the lower left-hand corner. But the majority of them are the smaller lot sizes. And so with the cost of construction, the cost of lots, everything going up, we're trying to get that, you know, we're not looking, you know, obviously it's not affordable housing, but trying to get that number down. I'm going to scroll through here. Here's Catso. Here we are in Catso. And what we have here is you've got a major arterial to the north, you've got a minor arterial to the east, and then you've got two internal collector streets. This piece of property is unique in the fact that it has to work around four Catso roadways, which is very expensive. And so with that being said, that's part of the reason for the lot increase in lot density as well, is to help afford to pay for some of these lots, some of these roadways that are being put in. And so when you look at it, these are the major roadway designations going through the development. One thing to be noted as well, Richland Road, while there's no improvements being directly to Richland other than turn lanes and a substantial amount of dedicated right-of-way, there is a pedway along that road that goes across this development. So not just a standard 5-foot sidewalk, but it'll be the 8-foot. That's going to match in and complement the development next to it that had that started that pedway, and then that comes through this side as well. So that's one item, is, you know, that goes along with it. We are inside the urban service area. We do have city sewer that Mr. Teddy talked about, and the other utilities are there as well. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the council may have.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Would anyone else from the public wish to speak on the preliminary plat for Richland? You're walking up.
So yes. Good evening. My name is Spencer Train. I'm a resident of Columbia. Appreciate the opportunity to address you. And really, for the sake of brevity, I've prepared some notes, so I'm going to read those here. We're against this development just because of the inadequate street dimensions and traffic overload that it's going to cause. The Code of Ordinances, Chapter 29, Appendix A, concerning street standards, stipulates that arterial roads that he just mentioned should be at least 40 foot wide. However, Richland Road, designated as an arterial road with the preliminary plat, measures only 24 feet and lacks shoulders. I highlight this because the development agreement for the subdivision does not include enhancing Richland Road at all, as he just mentioned, and as an infrastructure improvement, and only considers minor adjustments for certain intersections, a right turn lane being one of those. Additionally, the $100,000 allocated as a monetary contribution to offset the anticipated impacts will not even cover the cost of very minor improvements. On the other hand, Boone County roadway regulations specify that the average traffic, daily traffic ADT threshold for roads similar to this in width to Richland Road should not exceed 1,000. However, Richland Road already experiences an ADT in excess of 2,500, the maximum ADT allowed for arterial roads. So this information is confirmed by the traffic impact study. If we consider the projected traffic from seven newly approved and proposed developments, the ADT could potentially very much exceed the external, this 1,000 limit, over the limit. Consequently, the number and severity of accidents will likely increase. This roadway is not straight. It does have lots of up and down along there and some blind spots, so I think that needs to be considered as well. Consequently, the severity of these accidents and other things, it's just going to increase in some way, shape, or form. It's also important to note that there's no accident prediction study that has been conducted for this subdivision, only a traffic impact study. So for these reasons, approving this preliminary plat would violate the Code of Ordinances, Chapter 29, Article 5, concerning subdivisions, which states land shall not be subdivided nor developed where there is a threat to safety and general welfare for the inhabitants of the surrounding areas. This violation alone should suffice to reject this preliminary plat. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. My name is Pablo Bolaros. I'm a resident of Columbia, and I'm here to ask those of you who are planning to approve this plat to do so conditionally, subject to the redesign of Burley Drive, the collector road on the west border. I'm asking this because its design violates the code of ordinances as well, and it will help prevent the developer from violating state and federal environmental laws. And I'll briefly explain this. Regarding the violation of the code of ordinances, Burley Drive is a long and straight street, which will encourage speeding. This design goes against Chapter 29, Article 5 of the Code of Ordinances concerning subdivisions, which mentions that streets longer than, straight streets longer than 800 feet should be avoided to discourage speeding. Additionally, Appendix A of the same chapter concerning street standards explains in detail why curb designs are better than signage to prevent speeding. This is a safety issue. And this is an important point regarding the violation of Missouri's Endangered Species legislation and the United States Endangered Species Act of 1973. Burley Drive will bisect the last section of an existing climax forest corridor in the area, thereby eliminating a population of northern harriers, an endangered type of hawk protected by Missouri state law, which requires specific conditions for building their ground-based nest. Burley Drive will eliminate their habitat, violating Missouri state law. Additionally, this area is also habitat for the Hyannis emerald dragonfly, a federal endangered species protected by the United States Endangered Species Act of 1973, similar violation. This information was provided by the Missouri Department of Conservation during a recent consultation, and they also recommended that Burley Drive comply with their responsible construction guidelines, guidelines pledged by this city, which stipulate that roads must conform to the contour of existing forests and avoid traversing them. Satellite photo that you probably have in front of you showcases an ideal street layout for Burley Drive, addressing these issues and contributing to preserving the green belt along the south fork of the Grindstone Creek. So if you will approve, you're planning to approve this proposal, please do it conditionally, subject to the redesign of Burley Drive. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Chris Jones, second ward, not gonna miss tonight to speak about this. I was very disappointed in the gentleman sitting right here from Crockett Engineering when he said, and I quote, obviously it's not affordable housing. No bleep, Sherlock, it's not affordable housing. This is rich people housing. DeCarlin previously in about this topic had mentioned that we need housing of all types, which is not true. It's not. We do not need rich people housing. And he had said, well, if we have housing, or if we get the rich people housing, then the poorer people will be able to buy the rich, and then it'll basically go on up from there. That's basically trickle-down housing. Now, I don't know if you guys remember elementary school, middle school, where they talked about trickle-down economy. That has basically been debunked. Trickle-down economy, unless you're a Republican, you shouldn't be believing this. Only Republicans do, and there's a reason why Republicans. Anyway, so what we learned tonight is that there will be 251 rich people homes going in this plat. Earlier tonight, Margaret McDonald talked about people dying. She talked about people freezing, about people overheating, death. She talked about people having a lot of health issues. The reason why we have so many unhoused people here in Columbia is because they don't have housing. They have lost their housing. It is not because they don't want to to be in a house, it is because they can't afford a house. And so instead of you spending time talking about how that we can improve the lives of those most vulnerable in our city, you guys have spent weeks upon weeks, hours upon hours, talking about how that we can get rich people, more rich people housing. Two speakers ago, the gentleman talked about how that $100,000 will not cover the street infrastructure. That Crockett Engineering, the developers, are going to be giving $100,000. And you guys had said, well, that'll cover the infrastructure, and the city won't be using valuable resources. But as the gentleman here tonight said, $100,000 will not widen that road from 24 feet, which is what it is now, to 40 feet, which is what it has to be. So I am asking you to deny this tonight, unless Crockett Engineering and any other rich people housing developers agree to dedicate 10% of all houses that they'd build to affordable housing. Thank you.
Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Yes, Renee Carter, Second Ward, and I would like to address once again the environmental impact that this subdivision is going to have on our city and the area. And the gentleman before Chris was talking to that. And so I guess my question is, in all of the research about the subdevelopment, why we don't have anything about that environmental impact to the Hawks. So that should be in all of your council memo when it talks about environmental impact, and so it's missing. And so our expectation is that we keep in mind that environmental impacts are equity issues. And when we lose our wildlife and we lose our trees and our grasslands, that has an environmental impact on those who are homeless, those who can't afford the same kind of housing that we have and can't afford their utility bills. And so we need to do our due diligence up front and speak to environmental impacts when we approve subdivisions. Thank you.
Would anyone else from the public wish to speak? None, we'll go to council questions, council comments. Obviously got a few. Yeah, Betsy.
Well, I have questions about the environmental impact, the Hawks and whatever else we're just hearing about, and the straight road, which is then going to come back to haunt us with the need for traffic calming. So have we looked into either or both of those?
First, the endangered species part of the environmental impact. Not aware of a nesting area or another critical resource on this tract that would need to be preserved. In general, there are some endangered species of bats that are associated with this area, but we don't know of a regulation that would prevent them from moving forward with development on this. In other words, there's other ways that the Department of Conservation manages endangered and threatened species. So there's not a regulatory requirement that we can enforce applicable to this plat regarding that.
Is that something that is routinely asked when we look at a development this size, or is that something that someone needs to bring up, or is that something
It hasn't been part of our routine. I think we look at it as something that's primarily a state responsibility. We do try to preserve some critical habitat through preserving green spaces around streams, for example, the 25% requirement for tree preservation, which will be part of this. So that does serve to preserve some wildlife habitat. And then going on to the
Can I just interrupt then? Does the developer look at that, or the Missouri conservation people, just if they swing by and realize that there's a development happening? I mean, how
can we ask the representative for the developer. Do you know, Tim, the process for, because like what triggers the state letting us know if there's an issue?
As Mr. Teddy indicated, right now what is on the radar of DNR, everything out here is going to be permitted through the Department of Natural Resources. And so they have resources talking about identifying endangered species. So, in what we have found, what Mr. Bellatos talks about, who backs up to this development, he bought a house that's adjacent to Burley Drive.
Okay.
And what he's referring to is a dragonfly that when our research is not really native to this part of the state. It's really in the southeast portion of the state. Furthermore, the actual hawk itself, its nesting grounds are in northern United States, so then it doesn't really typically nest in this area at all. It may migrate through, but it has its nesting areas that are in northern United States. There are a couple of bats, and so there are some regulations. We're aware of that, and we take care of those. We do it through precautions, and we do it according to the regulations. When can we do land disturbance, and when can we not do land disturbance? And then if we want to go, there's specific parameters about that. And so if we want to do land disturbance during the protected time, we have to do a bat study. We go out there, and we actually capture bats and see if there's any bats present in that location. And if they're not, then we get cleared to move forward. If not, if there are, then we have to wait during certain times of the year when they're not nesting. So there are precautions and protocols and procedures that we take that we adhere to.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And then regarding the straight street, this was a comment that was discussed during as this went through the preliminary plat process, I think a year ago. We're asking for a revised preliminary plat. If it's denied tonight, we revert back to the original preliminary plat. So Burley's going to stay the same regardless. But other things that have been done in the past when we have straight streets like this is we've put traffic calming in the middle. We've put islands in the middle, or we've actually narrowed the pavement. One of the things that we've done before in the past in conjunction with the traffic engineers is actually pull that pavement in a little bit. Because it gives the sense to the driver that's a little constrictive, so traffic slows down. So there's other mechanisms that we can utilize outside of the 800 feet. The 800 feet is really there for residential neighborhoods. When we have driveways and we have houses and we have kids playing in the street, that's really what those are really for. When we're talking about trying to traverse many properties, keep in mind this neighborhood collector goes all the way from I-70 Drive all the way down to New Haven Road eventually. And so it's there to traverse traffic. It's there to get that traffic from one place to another. And so they don't want it to go 20 miles an hour. They would like to go a little bit quicker. But we also understand that we don't want a raceway. So there's other procedures. When we talk to traffic engineers, there's other mechanisms that we can use if they think that's too straight, that we can add other traffic calming in there to help slow that traffic down.
And you don't have any driveways that are coming out on that street?
No, ma'am. Driveways on it.
Okay,
we have
so
the eyebrow.
That's really set up as a move traffic through.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. And if you look at the original preliminary plat, the east-west collector, there's driveways on it in Old Hawthorne North. There were driveways on it. There are currently on the one that was in the county, the preliminary plat that's in the county. Should this be approved, the driveways on all of that old preliminary plat and the one in the county go away. So that collector street has no driveways on it at that point.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Tim, just a real quick comment on the road narrowing and the different things. I think based on the conversation this council has had over the last 6 months, especially with like forum and the conversations there, like things to put in so that we don't have somebody coming back for us and asking Shane to install traffic calming,
right.
You know, I think would be of interest to us. At the same time, knowing like the size of the sidewalks or the pedways on either side, because I imagine a lot of these kids are going to be going to Cedar Ridge, and I want them to have that opportunity to ride bikes or walk.
What has been identified is a pedway along the south side of Richland Road, and everything else is an internal 5-foot sidewalk. And so that's what's been identified by the city, and that's what we are proposing here.
And then to the point about Richland Road, my assumption is that part of that $100,000 is going into also the other development agreements we have with the other developments happening there for the eventual improvements to Richland Road that we're doing with the county.
That is right. So this development, along with Old Hawthorne North, this development did its own standalone traffic improvement study, or traffic impact study. Old Hawthorne North did theirs, and Silver Lakes to the north did theirs. They're all independent of one another. And when we do a traffic study, the very first meeting we have is we have a scoping meeting with the city. So our traffic engineers meet with the city traffic to determine what do you want us to look at and what intersections you want us to evaluate and what growth patterns you want us to look at. Give us the criteria, we'll perform that study. They do that. Then they come back, and the city came back in these instances, and the city was the one who proposed these numbers, whatever it was for Old Hawthorne North, whatever it was for Silver Lakes, and then this number was smaller. Now it's larger due to the increased number of lots. But that 103 is proposed by the city based on a formula that they have for the Richland and Grace Lane intersection. And so they've said, you know, this is how we want to do it for, you know, to be fair for all developments. They come up with that formula, and then each of these projects are assigned that the value that they have to pay based on, you know, that criteria.
Okay.
That's not something that we propose. It's something that the city formulates and then we agree to.
Okay. I think we'll go to our staff questions now.
Thanks,
Tim. Follow up to that one, questions for Tim or perhaps Shane. So we've been talking about Richland Road and the improvements there. It sounds like, you know, obviously our priority is the intersection at Grace Lane in Richland, obviously. But why haven't we been asking for contributions to the improvements to Richland as a road as a whole?
The place where the system fails, so to speak, where the delays occur,
is because we don't own
that's
it.
At that intersection. I mean, people will see more traffic. Traffic will grow. It's going to inevitably grow. But more traffic isn't necessarily recorded as a deficiency. But when you get delays at intersections, that's where the effort's focused. So the northbound movement on Rolling Hills crossing Richland, that's the most severe and most degraded level of service. So that's what fails first, so to speak, with this growth in residential traffic. So that's why we suggest that's where it
So any cost to the improvements of Richland Road will fall on the city and the city alone?
Well, it's a county roadway on this particular segment,
right,
east of the North Fork Graceland. Of the Grindstone mm-hmm. Creek. It's a county, and the county staff are starting to talk with city staff and city public works staff about possibly a county project being done there.
Okay.
And there'll be additional exactions, I'm sure, as additional development comes online. But with regard to this one and those several others mentioned, and also the Five Pines, which is a county subdivision, but it's using the city's sewer treatment, we're getting a contribution from that to be paid in stages, and that can be used at that intersection also.
And then as far as the comment that Mr. Crockett made about you know, being open to figuring out traffic calming as Burley is developed, how would that come into be?
That would be on the street plans that are part of the construction plans, which is what they work on after a preliminary
plan. And so that's
approval.
The sort of thing city staff will be looking for?
Yeah. And I think knowing that council's especially concerned about that, I think we'll look for something like a narrowing of the street at intersections, bulb outs, things like that. There'll also be street trees, which some studies suggest does have a traffic calming influence. And when you don't have the driveways and the front yards directly on it, too, there isn't as much aggravation as there is in other areas where you might have similar streets.
Any other council questions or council comments?
I mean, we're about a year out from them being able to start, so they're going to have the meetings with the county and such, and then we're not even looking at them being able to build for about a year or more. Mm-hmm.
All right, I almost said Sheila. Sorry, Holly.
It's okay.
Holly, will you please call roll on Bill 14124?
Council Bill 14124, Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda. So, Holly, will you please read the items on the consent agenda twice and call roll?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 14224, 14324, 14424, 14525, 14624, 14724, 14824, 14924, 15024, and resolutions 11824, 11924, 12024, 12124, 12224, 12324, 12424, 12524, 12624, 12724, 12724. Council Bills 14224, 14324, 14424, 14524, 14624, 14724, 14924, 15024, and Resolutions 11824, 11924, 12024, 12124, 12224, 12324, 12424, 12524, 12624, 12724, and 12824. Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters? Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Ms. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
All right. Holly, will you please read the items under introduction and first read?
Just one second. Thank you. All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Council Bills 15124, 15224, 15324, 15424, 15524, 15624, 15724, 15824, 15924, 16024, 16124, 16224, 16324, 16324, 16524, and 16524. First reading.
Thank you. All right, we're moving on to the report section. The first two reports we have are reports that are required by state statute for the first one is a report from the Business Loop CID and is informational. I see we have the executive director here of that. Do you wish to present on it? All right. Does council have any questions on this one? All right.
Only a compliment.
You can give a compliment.
Can I compliment?
Yes.
The flags, all of the things that you have done are really fantastic. Thank you. Just do more of it. Do more of it. Just do more of it.
Okay. Moving on then for the next one. Again, it's a report informationally required by state statute. I see the executive director of the downtown CID. Do you wish to make a presentation? All right. Are there any questions for that one? You should give a compliment now.
I'm ready to, and I'm thinking, I don't want to be the only one. Yeah. You're also fantastic. I mean, the flags and all of the beautiful things that you're doing to add beautification to our city. Aesthetics matter, and yeah. It's really wonderful to see the improvements. Thank you.
And I'd just like to compliment your trash pickup guys. They do a wonderful job of cleaning up. As I come through early Sunday morning or, you know, after some football games and whatnot, it always looks very nice.
All right. Moving on then, up next we have a report. This is on the Convention Center Feasibility Center, or Conference Center Feasibility Study. Do we have a staff report?
Yes. So this report is an FYI only. As noted in the council report, the meetings and conventions market in Columbia have gradually rebounded from the pandemic. And the Convention and Visitors Bureau, or I'll call us the CVB, for the rest of the report, is seeing more demand for meeting planners to bring meetings to our city. And at the same time, there has been interest from developers to building more meeting space in Columbia, either in the form of a conference center and or a convention center. The council approved money in this year's budget to move forward with a feasibility study for a potential conference center in Columbia. This feasibility study will create a market and feasibility analysis that explores a local market. It will include a market, site, and needs analysis for the possibility of the development and operation of a conference center. The study should address the following: conducting a hotel market service to be distributed to all hoteliers in the city. Just as another FYI, I have already emailed all of the hoteliers, sales, and general managers to let them know we are doing this, so there's no surprise on their end, and ask them to contact me with any questions. Investigate potential market demand for a new conference center, assessing competition from other similar facilities and comparable venues within the region. Identify potential hotel and conference center development sites in the city that have sufficient land area with proper zoning and access to sewer water infrastructure. I will be working with other departments to identify that. Develop preliminary building program requirements to define the type and amount of space required for this high quality conference center. Prepare a hotel and conference center development prospectus, which includes a market study, potential sites, and local tourist assets. Research and provide possible operational structures that will best fit the needs and goals of the city for the recommended conference center. Based on the market and feasibility analysis, the contractor will separately project annual, each year over 20 years, facility-related operating expenditures and revenues for a new convention center to determine the feasibility. Please note that the consultants will also take into consideration any conference center plans that may already be developing, as well as current conference and meeting space. One of the outcomes of this survey will be making certain that the market can bear any facilities that may be proposed. Market saturation, having more meeting space than needed, needs to be a consideration. I would like to clarify that we are not advocating for the city to build, own, or manage a convention center at this time. Our hope is this study will produce information that will help inform the community as they build for the present as well as the future. An example of key stakeholders that will be interviewed for this project, Columbia CVB director and staff, CVB advisory board members, owners, general managers, and our sales managers of key area hotels, mayor and or council members, whichever are appropriate, and I will ask you to let me know who would like to be a part of that interview process. City manager, finance department director, the district downtown Columbia key staff, I would also like them to interview the Business Loop CID as well. Key site development partners and stakeholders, and then a handful of other Chamber of Commerce leadership, Visit Missouri director, Boone County officials, and other key members, University of Missouri as well, other key members of the community that may have an interest and may have already looked at something like this. Upon completion of this feasibility analysis, the contractor will provide a report of their findings. I would like to find a time for them to present to the advisory board and the council at the same time. Any questions?
Questions, yeah. Betsy, then Don.
Do you have a time frame?
It is my understanding that it will be done by the beginning of the fiscal year. So,
like October? You mean like
yes,
this
ma'am.
Fiscal year?
Yes, barring any complications, that's what I was told.
Okay.
Don, you had a question?
Yeah, I know we're just beginning our process, but in addition to the hotel market survey, was there any consideration given to short-term rental survey?
No, but I think we could do that. I don't have a listing of all short-term rental owners, so I really
I know we're just beginning that process,
yeah.
But you know, they were able to identify an approximate number that we have, so there should be some data to work from.
You know, we can certainly look into that, obviously.
Lisa, you had a question?
Thank you. Yep. Thank you. I have a couple questions. So if I ask a question and then somebody else wants to go, just stop me. And I'll do one question at a time. When I think about a feasibility study, I think about it from, like, the not-for-profit perspective that we're trying to see, like, can we do this? Should we do this, mm-hmm. right? And can we basically raise the money to do this? So I understand the reasoning to do it. I'm confident that we have the staff a really talented staff that could pull all this together. And I'm gonna trust that you all looked at this and said it's gonna be better if we get a consultant to do this because of the time involved. So I'm not questioning that, but I have no doubt that you and others here have the skill set to be able to bring this together. My first question is once we get that information, are we going to use that to market to people who could possibly have the resources to bring a convention center here? And it's my hope that we're not going to limit who we're marketing to, that this is basically our package to go out and say, hey, we're looking for this. Do you want to come and build this in our community? Is that how it's going to go? Or can you kind of educate me on how you envision this being used, the information being used?
Sure. So in two ways. The first way is the simple, like, take the order way. I have developers calling me at least every other month saying they want to bring a hotel and or a conference center here. So this is the information to market to them saying, if you want to bring it here, we've done a study. This is what we believe is the right thing for you to build in the right size. And then, yes, moving forward, finding ways to market that to those who would like to build it, to bring it to Columbia. Again, I'm not advocating for the city to do it, but there are those folks, developers who are out there who would be interested in doing it. So I don't want it to sit on the shelf. I want to use it as education, and I want to use it as a way to show people the right, what Columbia needs now for the present and then for the future.
You can question, may I? And I am hoping that we're not going to be limited on the side of town that we look into, because there is some right development opportunity in Ward 2 and some other areas, and we'd really like to see, I want to make sure that it's not only focused on one particular area or two particular areas of our community.
No, and that was one of the reasons to do this study, because we didn't want to focus on one area. We wanted to take an over umbrella view of the entire city to see what properties were there, to see what was available, to see the best place to put a convention center. Some of the things to take into consideration when building a convention center is not only the land, is it ready to build? What is there to do around there? Is there potential to build things for people to do? Because people, when people go to a convention, they want to be able to walk somewhere and do something, and or drive, but really walking is what they're looking for.
We've got beautiful parks. We've got lots of other opportunities.
So, I mean, really, I'm making a long answer when I shouldn't. The answer, the short answer is yes. The whole point of doing this was to look at the entire city to find the right spot that helps everyone.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And my only request would be, in addition to all the information you have in there, when other communities sometimes look at the financing for, in case the city has to offer incentives for this, and they're looking at the variety of it. When you look at other communities, sometimes if they're going to talk about something like TIF financing or incentives, they have that additional kind of clause, like the but for, like it's going to do more. Like, we're going to get more out of it. So I think of, like, Lincoln, Nebraska has requirements on, like, the sustainability of the building or, like, on-site renewable energy, like, something that's in there. So I'd be interested, as they're doing that research, like, sort of lit review, is to what options do we have to include those if we are then tasked with doing any sort of incentives.
Yes, and thank you for, I think that was one of your questions earlier today, so I have that marked to make sure we talk about.
Yeah, I think Lincoln, Nebraska, Dubuque, Iowa, both have beautiful conference centers that are wish part of the city, but also have that sort of like environmental impact that I think showcases the community well. Any other comments for that? All right, well, thank you, Amy, appreciate the update. Moving on, would anyone from the public wish to speak? We're on general comments by public, council, and staff. Not everyone all at once. I know you're here to talk. There's like eight of you. Come on. Sorry. Hit it, Eugene.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeland. Tonight I'd like to continue what I started last meeting. The subject was that I had been listening to Coast to Coast on the gentleman that was a water expert. The subject was neurotoxins and forever chemicals, he said, was in our water supplies. Maybe a very large reverse osmosis unit could be installed at the release of public drinking water. All other improvements could be made behind this, so it may take years, but at least the public would receive much safer water for preventing many future health problems and other ailments that would come with continued drinking of water that's not right for the public. We've heard these stories up north where there was lead, just goes on and on. On the subject of homelessness, I was trying to mention improvements to the park at the corner of Rangeline and Wilkes in front of the St. Francis House. We could use two water fountains, one located on the east as well as one on the west there at that park. The west end fountain currently needs improvement, and we could add the spring water just like we have behind the old Hardee's here on Providence. Maybe two of these. Nothing enclosed, but for cooling only on hot days. They could actually get into some water that cools the body. Maybe less emergency runs for our staff for the city. The fence could be painted with messages about homelessness and their struggles. A large dumpster could be placed on the east end, or one or two trash cans placed across the park. This would be a real asset to the neighborhood. Each one of us needs to mention pick up after yourself, which that means addressing the homeless. Why would we do this? Because the preacher at Wilkes is now doing this from the pulpit. We even need cigarette butts that need to be discarded. Everybody can do their way of discarding cigarette butts, but we don't want the people to have to lay in the grass among cigarette butts because they can't help their personal situation. I hope this is made a little more clear tonight, but in that effort, thank you, Mr. Seawood, for bringing the homeless shelter here, and I'm trying to continue the same thing by having city improvements in respect to those who are homeless. It got spoke about earlier here tonight, and nobody knew that I was talking about the exact same substance.
Thank you, Eugene. Did anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Chris Jones, Second Ward. I am requesting 5 minutes on behalf of Hold Como Accountable. Many of us have heard about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's where one need is put above or below another according to what you need in order to live. On the lowest need, which is what everybody needs, is food, shelter, clothing, water, air, physiological needs. Two of you up on the stage right now, out of those elected, you campaigned that you were for those who are most in need. I'm looking at the two right now. The other three, One, also the one that's absent tonight, also campaigned on what campaign that we were going to help those who are most in need. Tonight's vote that each of you did, it wasn't for those most in need. You made the rich people richer. Congratulations, that's what we all wanna do. Trickle-down housing does not work. Now, according to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, this means that housing is a human right. And yet, we have stated that in Columbia that we are all about the rights of those who need them. We are all about protecting those who need protected. But why in the world are we not protecting basic human rights? Tonight, you guys have stated that you want 251 more rich people housing. We're going to be taking away very limited resources from the city in order to build better roads for the rich people housing. You guys have basically given a big FU to those in need. I am so disappointed in you. Now, you have the ability to change this. You have the ability to say that we are actually going to do something. Now, Eugene had talked about thanking DeCarlin for bringing the shelter here tonight, but what he didn't point out was that we actually do not have enough housing. Margaret, at the beginning of council, talked about how that room at the inn is actually over capacity often. That means that we don't have enough beds, enough warmth, enough cooling for our those in most in need here in Columbia. And yet we heard from the Conventions and Visitors Bureau that they want to bring in a new convention in the Visitors Bureau, bring in more tourism to the town. But those are low-wage jobs. Where in the world are you going to house people who need low or who have low-wage jobs? We do not have enough housing here in Columbia right now for those who we have in it. So we're going to bring in more people. Are we expecting them to bunk up 10 roommates in rich people housing? But yet again, we have that law here, or that ordinance here in Columbia, about the number of unrelated people that can live in one house. So that's not an option. So basically, you're causing more of a housing crisis. Now, I think that it's great that we want to bring more jobs, that we want to build our economy here in Columbia. However, if you're going to build your economy here in Columbia, don't be like Branson, where they had a crisis of housing in the 90s. And they had to slapstick up a whole bunch of affordable housing, and they were putting people in housing that was not working. But that's precisely what you're directing the town to do, is that you are telling the citizens here in Columbia, the residents of Columbia, those who live and work here in Columbia, that you do not care about those most in need. You care about the professors. You care about the doctors. You care about the Lorries and the Waltons here in town. You care about the Cronkies. Why don't you care about everybody else? Why don't you care about the 95%, the rest of us? Why in the world are you making it so that I see you looking at the clock just to make sure I'm not going over time? I want you to actually to care about what you campaigned on and actually care about the people in Columbia who need you most. Thank you.
Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Jim Windsor, 200 Manor Drive. I spoke the last meeting about the fraudulent annexation of the water plant, and I appreciate, Mayor, that you asked staff to look into it. Unfortunately, you didn't give a timeline or ask specific questions. They will be presenting a water rate increase with the budget, and I know there are groups that are opposed to the increase on principle because of how the structure is. It's a very simplistic, let's just add percentage points to the current structure. And even though one of the Water and Light Board members has real concerns about the structure, they won't say anything because, well, they need the rate increase. As I said last time, I do not believe you need that rate increase because of the fraudulent annexation. And you may be told that, well, there's nothing we can do about it, because I did a quick Google search, and I even for the large cities in Missouri, there's a 5-year timeline, so we're beyond that. So I don't think you can do anything about the annexation, but you could pass an ordinance that specifies any of the funds that were given to the general fund because of that fraudulent process be given back for the, this will be the sixth year, 2024. And going forward, the utility can pay the general fund and then the general fund pay back that amount, because part of that projection for the rate increase is that $800,000 that I talked about. And so ask them to do something, you know, for the next council meeting and get specifics. And these are completely different people. So they have no reason to hang on to what was done fraudulently. And if they do, I think they're going to miss out on any building any trust with the citizens. So thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Good evening. I just wanted to come to reiterate what I shared last month about how I feel City Council can lead our community.
Brittany, will you say the name? Will you say your name, Brittany?
Yes, of course. I am Dr. Brittany Fatoma, and I'm so happy to be here tonight. I'm sure everyone has had a very interesting Monday. I know I have. And what made my day interesting is my daughter decided to, she told me actually, she's four, that she wanted to stay home today. And I grappled with it because I was like, no, she needs to go to school. She's in preschool. Schooling is important. But she convinced me. And we were able, she's four.
She's good at it.
And so I was like, okay, I'll make sure she gets some schooling in today. So she counted to 100. She read a book, their CVC consonant vowel consonant book. And then after she did that, she got to watch one of her favorite shows. And then she got to spend time with my husband playing. So she had a really fun day. And I was so happy that my daughter has the privilege of two educators in the home to be able to read to her, and she can count to 100. And she's just so excited and ready for school. But then it made me think about the other children that do not have the privilege of two educators as parents in their home. And being in a city where we have allowed, and I'm saying we as a community, it's on all of us, for the opportunity gap between Black children and other children in Columbia to not receive the best of the best that education has to offer. And there's something I share all the time, and I want to reiterate it tonight. When we address the most marginalized person in the room, everyone benefits. But when we address the most privileged person in the room, the privilege benefits in the moment, but in the end, we all suffer. And now we're looking at that here in our city because we haven't done our due diligence, because we haven't addressed these very apparent needs. We are literally suffering the cause of a lack of education, which increases crime, which increases economic mobility, which impacts the home and ultimately impacts the community. So again, I want to encourage our city council. I know your work is hard, and I know it's very challenging, but I think together, because we thrive together, that we can address this to make sure that all of our children here in Columbia gets the best education so that our community can continue to thrive and grow. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else from the public wish to speak? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments. Don, I'll start with you.
Sure. This week, Thursday, Independence Day, and we'll be celebrating for a lot of, it's easy to just think, oh, it's a holiday, it's a day off, whatever the reason is, enjoy the fireworks, et cetera, et cetera. But I also would just say pause and stop to think just the significance of it, much like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, what it means. And what it led to, and that is what we have. And it was not perfect to begin with. It's not perfect today yet. We're still working toward it. Here tonight, the process that we went through tonight, last council meeting, next council meeting, it's how we work to improve. And that, what happened on July 4th is what led to the process that we are able to enjoy today to try to make Columbia better. Thank you.
Betsy?
I just have a question, and I'm not sure. I guess I should start by addressing the council, but we heard Margaret earlier tonight talk about overnight cooling centers, and I know she's correct. In the winter, we do warming centers, and I did not know if there was a way to do this this summer, preferably in the next few weeks or sooner. Of seeing if Turning Point could provide some cooling, or
what is our current contract with them for emergency shelters?
And is that something that we want to ask? I mean, is that something the council wants to?
I think I'd want to know what is our currently doing, and then what is
just so right now it's just Room at the Inn. So this year was the first year that Room at the Inn went year round.
Right, with our assistance.
With our assistance, correct.
In our property.
Yes, ma'am. So Salvation
Army? I mean, I think it's, I'm sorry, but I think it's important to say that the city has been investing in this and are looking to continue to invest rather than saying we're ignoring it.
No,
so
absolutely.
Go on.
No, I appreciate that. Salvation Army, which also has some cold cots for the summer. So I did reach out to Stephanie and I asked her staff if they could reach out to Turning Point so they can maybe serve as an overflow. So when Room at the End does get to that full capacity, that there is additional location. I know we paid for them to provide that service for the winter, and so we're trying to see if we can do the same thing for the summer.
Okay, so you'll let us know what the feedback is from staff, hopefully by our next council meeting.
So our staff will reach out to them tomorrow to see if they're even willing to entertain it, and then if they are, then we can bring something back.
If not, we might need to do some sort of other outreach to find another. Okay. I think it's worth looking into. I obviously agree. I'm sorry. I was naive. I thought we were also looking at having enough for this. That was why we did the year-round for the Ashley Street project. So I didn't realize about the capacity.
Yeah, I didn't. I just found out that they were at capacity today, so I didn't know they were at.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Anything else, Betsy?
That was just it. Really, just, you know, can we provide that, or can Turning Point provide that, and what would be the cutoff to ask them to open that and. What can we pay them?
Yeah. I'll say something to that.
Yeah.
Also, when addressing that, can we also look at time? Because currently, like, when checking in, you're checking in at 7 o'clock, and some people are still wanting to enjoy that time out. So can we also speak to what is the latter time in which they could actually check in? Just in any cooling station.
Okay. What the time the operations could be. Yeah. Lisa.
Appreciate your comment, Dawn. Thank you. And as well as Betsy, those were two things I was thinking about. So just ditto what you said. I'm just going to take that. I've got one order of business that after I've had many emails, okay, to and from city managers, leadership team about and with staff about a need for clear sidewalk ordinances and policies. And so I'd like to make a motion for staff to produce a report on sidewalk policies, design, maintenance, and preservation for discussion at a future work session.
I would second that. Discussion. You're basically asking for staff. You want to provide?
Yes.
We're asking for a report on our sidewalk policies and maintenance of and replacement, I assume?
Yeah, for sidewalk policies, design, maintenance, and preservation for discussion at a future work session.
Or it could come back as a report for us and see if it's worthy of a work session?
Well, it's been recommended a work session
that your recommendation
from the city manager's office.
I think there's a lot of conversations about currently doing, what we've done in the past, and where we plan to go. And so I think it may serve us to have that full conversation as a work session, working. We can actually get some feedback on directions.
Okay. Any other discussion on the motion on the table? Yeah, Don.
Want to make sure that we include the applicable ordinances, you know, that we have so that we know, the applicable ordinances.
Okay. Which is kind of what led to this.
I would be okay with getting the report first and then deciding on a work session, because that's typically how we address things, making sure that we have the report that says this is a deed and understanding in the direction in which we want to go. So I would enjoy a report first.
Is that okay with staff on that part? And then if it turns into a longer discussion, we'll adjourn the discussion into a work session.
Yeah, that sounds fine because it was a lot of emails.
All right. Any other discussion on this one? All right. All those in favor of requesting for staff to come back with a report on a sidewalk maintenance, design, and the other thing you said?
Yes. Sidewalk policies, design, maintenance, and preservation.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay. Hearing none. That's direction good. And then you had a second item, Lisa?
No.
Oh, okay. No. All right. Roy? All right, so I have a few. One is, do we have a timeline on hearing back about the, you said you were going to look into the water treatment plant annexation and get some of the background on that?
We can bring something back on. Well, we have two reports that are coming back on the 15th from the last meeting as well. We can bring something on the 15th.
Okay.
It's a The question about the annexation is probably the simple conversation. The question about what we can do in the future is probably a more in-depth conversation.
Okay. So, yeah, a report back on the findings and also the look into legalities of it. That was the big red flag, I think, for most of us. Questions on that. The second was, I'd be interested in if there's support from council, whether or not staff has looked into a solarize campaign. I know typically it's done in cities that don't have a municipal utility, which also offers incentives. So I didn't know if that was the sort of thing that we have looked into, but taking advantage of any of those financial, especially right now with the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act and any of those, just to see. And that can even just be a response back. And then my other one, I have two. One was just kind of like my own sort of statement. You know, when the Supreme Court talked about the grants pass ruling, it's my hope that we're not going to get into the process of arresting people out of poverty, because I think that's what most cities are scared of. And so I think the discussion here tonight about having enough shelter space is obviously still of an interest, because we all know people should be indoors, or we would like for them to be in a safe, conditioned environment. I'm just putting that out. And then the other one was, and it's a shame that Lieutenant Alpers is not here, because we received a really nice email. So I'm just, with permission from the person who this incident happened, I'm just going to read parts of the email, some excerpts. So last week, there was an incident where our police was responding, and the victim's dog passed away. And I just want to comment from the owner of the dog, or the family members, I know it wasn't what we all wanted when Taylor and our dog died, but I hold nothing but respect for your whole team. They cared. They could have just let Taylor run off, but they took the time out of their investigation to help me. Lieutenant Alpers worked his whole day just to make sure Taylor was taken care of and to find out what happened and why he died. I felt bad for Lieutenant Alpers having to watch an old guy cry, but he was kind and caring and very professional. Thank you, and please take the time to thank your whole team involved in this crazy situation. I want to thank CPD for their professionalism and quick response, and how the officers took care of Johnny, and the many officers that took time to be kind to me. It was a lot to process. And I just wanted to say thank you. I know Scott's not working today, or right now this evening, but just to say that's the sort of thing that we want, obviously, when responding to incidents, is to respond compassionately. And I think I see that in these instances, and it was nice to hear that feedback. Is there anything else, anything from staff?
I don't have anything.
All right. So you know, go ahead and adjourn us. Thank you.
I meant to tell you.
I have a question. Maybe I know how to answer this.